You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Balls Hard Liberty Podcast. This is episode number 287 of East Central and his favorite podcast. Jeremiah Morrill here, joined by executive video audio engineer, and sometimes he presses the buttons on time, Mr. Zach Burcham.
I caught it this time.
You caught it in time to admit your mistake, but it's very minor, so we'll let it go. Our special co-host slash guest today is going to be Bash Kreider. Hello. He is here. He is on camera. He is observing Drive January. We're going to talk about breweries, so that he's not cracking, folks. He's going to stick through it. He's got, how many more days? I'm not observing Dry January, so I don't know. How many more hours do you have left in this adventure?
That's a good question. I should have calculated that.
I mean, it's probably 6 days? So 6 times 24, 48, and about 120 hours to go.
That was some fast math.
Some of us sell stuff and have to use numbers real quick.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah. That's the first time anybody's ever complimented my math skills. You know he is an attorney, so he's good at lying.
Yes.
This show is going to be about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh. But hopefully you'll always learn something new. Somebody will probably check my math and let me know it was nowhere close. But damn it, we got to an answer quickly, and that's what's important. We just did 15 solid minutes for you in Patreon, but when you actually get that file, it's going to show more like 28 minutes. And that's a promise from the Boss Hog team here that we will over deliver. If you join the Patreon every single week, you get, if you're up to like $50 a month or more, get your name dropped at the top of every episode. You got something to promote, we'll promote you. If you've got, if you don't have something to promote and you just want to hear your name, that's fine. We'll do that too. And we genuinely do appreciate the folks that make this happen. It's the reason why we're able to be here every week. It's the reason on a 27 degree snowy day that it's actually toasty in here, or somewhat toasty in here. It was about 65 when I walked in the door. Not too bad. So we say thank you to Christy Avery up there in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Jonathan Phillips of Andy Moore Buick GMC, and Jonathan Phillips for mayor. He's been trying to order a truck for me since October. I think we maybe are making progress. Don't know. GM has been acting like there's some sort of a supply chain crisis, but John's doing his best. And Anthony Meyer has been delivering parts for the automotive industry, I hope, all over the country as a truck driver, making things come true. Zach, are you okay over there? You're chuckling. I don't know if you're laughing at me, laughing at the chat. I'm always nervous.
No, I was laughing at the thought of, yes, you need to go send Anthony Meyer to all the suppliers and have him pick up. And he just shows up with a truck with your truck in the back of it, but in parts, and just drops it off to the assembly plant and says, I need you to put this together because he needs my help.
One piece at a time. He's getting everything that's on constraint, that's keeping them from building my beautiful unicorn GMC 1500 tow machine.
But if Anthony Meyer delivered it, every panel would have a hidden meme somewhere on the panel.
And on the backside of it, it would be engraved with Salt Bay.
Just thousands of memes all over your vehicle.
Be very, very troubling. There is merchandise available, but we are doing it in-house now. This is where Dakota normally says, send him an email, tell him what kind of merch you want, and he will put his wonderful bride to work doing it. So if you have merch requests for the Boss Hog Show, you want to show us off, Dakota@BossHogOfLiberty.com. Drop an email, let him know what you want, and he'll see to it that something happens. All right, I've talked too much. Bash Kreider, you are back. I think you were here with us in October of last year.
That
Halloween timeline,
right?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's been 4 or 5 months. You came back to us and said, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to do this.
It was Cinco de Mayo.
Was it Cinco? Oh my God, it was May.
Yeah, it was a while before that.
Oh, I thought it was Halloween. It was the other Mexican Halloween or Mexican holiday.
Exactly.
Dawn of the Dead.
Was
it really Cinco de Mayo?
It was.
My God, where did last year go, Zach?
Yeah. There are two time frames now. There used to be like BC before Christ. Now it's before COVID and after COVID, and everything after COVID is just a foggy blur. Part of my brain still in like March of 2020 kind of thing. Yeah.
So true.
I wouldn't have thought it was that long.
So the events of Cinco de Mayo are why our friend Bash is doing Dry January.
I was seriously thinking, like, how much smarter would it be to, like, do whatever your dry holiday and have a holiday, like, on the first?
Yeah.
Like, but it would have to be, like, a goofy holiday, like Groundhog Day or something like that, where it's just a fog. You don't know what day it is because it's, like.
I think it's called New Year's Day.
Yeah, but people don't, like. No, because people are drinking all through. New Year's Day is the end of like a 10-day period where nobody knows what day it is. It's also like you got meat sweats because you've probably been eating like summer sausage for 4 days.
You've lost track of everything.
You've lost track. Yeah, there's no time between Christmas and New Year's. It's just a blur. I'm still not out of that yet. I still don't know what day it is.
You just worked your first five-day week since
October. I'm not quite. I'm 80% of the way done. But yeah, I think I worked my...
Well, are you planning on showing up tomorrow?
Well, yeah, I don't...
You're an American. We claim success and victory
I'm going to walk upstairs tomorrow and log into my work
and today. do your part.
Yeah, but I've worked. This will be my first or second 5-day week since Thanksgiving, I think.
So, our goal today is that we're going to talk to Bash. We're going to pick up where we left off on the Cinco de Mayo talk, and we're going to do a little cryptocurrency update because he has been our Henry County crypto expert because. Chris Galt moved to Michigan for the Magenta team. And then we're going to talk the cream filling in this show today is going to be the Indiana Brewery, our struggling story because a local landmark is closed. And then there's a story that kind of originated from here in Henry County, that's making national news. So that's the itinerary. We'll see how far we go. We'll see what happens. We'll see if there's any filler and we'll see if anything has to disappear. Danny Morrill is in the chat, and he says he still owes Bash honey. I don't know. Do you know? Do you think he owes you money or honey?
I hope it's money. But honey would also work.
Honey is also acceptable.
With that coming from Danny, there's like a half a dozen possibilities of what that could mean.
Absolutely. That has me wondering if that's one of the stories that led to January 2.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. We're going to try. There are 5 key takeaways that you wanted to give us on estate planning for the younger generation. Now, Zach doesn't have to worry about this because he's already crossed over 40, but you and I are still.
We still have a chance.
Still under 40 years old.
Still have a chance to avoid these dangers.
This is key, important information.
Yeah.
For those of us that are under 40.
We're going to speed run them. I wrote them down this time so that I'd remember.
Got my paper and pencil. And if you're driving, obviously this is a recorded show, so you can press pause and grab your paper and pencil when you get to a place, and you can listen to it twice.
That's true.
I'm sure it's going to be worth every penny or ounce of honey that we're paying Bash. You have the stage.
I sure hope so. Okay, for one thing, family is becoming a more diversified thing in a lot of ways. Lots of people now get married with prior kids. Lots of people don't ever get married, whether they have kids or not. And lots of people get married without ever intending to have kids and ultimately don't. Each one of those is a unique situation. Things used to be, I don't know if you want to say one size fits all with the will, or if it was more like all just kind of stuffed themselves into one size, depending who you ask. But things were a lot simpler. You got married and, you know, you pass away. It doesn't matter what your will says because your spouse is still their kids too.
Right.
No longer the case. And that just means, you know, the more complicated the situation, the more planning you have to do. Similarly, if you're not going to have kids.
I will remind everybody that Bash is not just some random guy. He is an estate planning attorney. I failed to tell people this as we started the show, right? So this is coming from us.
I'm just some guy
of expertise.
It's Wikipedia that I've got on here.
Look this up on LegalZoom.
Yeah, this is straight off of LegalZoom.
All right. So step one, first thing of 5 to consider, is that if you have a family, it can be complicated. So don't go to LegalZoom.
Exactly.
Okay.
You need to talk to it. Basically, what these are all just reasons why you really need to talk to an attorney.
Yeah. I would say don't assume that your family is going to follow through your wishes. If you want your wishes done, then get an attorney to put it down on paper.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. Number two, diversified options. Like I said, it used to be the will was the only thing you could do. So it really was one size fits all. And that was just kind of that. So, you know, if LegalZoom had been a thing back then, well, yeah, we're all getting wills and that's it. Since then we've, you know, then we developed trusts. And then it was still kind of simple because it was like, if you have more money, get a trust. If you have less money, get a will. Well, now we also have transfer on death deeds. We also have payable on death accounts. You can now TOD your businesses and your vehicles. And what that means is think of them like knives in a knife set. Every single one of these is a powerful tool that will do real stuff. And it will absolutely slice your hand open if you do not know what you're doing. Or, well, not you, your kids. I mean, I guess you could feel...
Thankfully, you're dead in this story.
Yeah, feel free to screw it up. But anyway, so more options, more things that you need to consider, or more importantly, just more reasons to get good guidance. I guess you could just go to law school, but there's people who you can pay shockingly reasonable sums to just walk you through that process. Okay, next issue is money is increasingly sparse. I don't remember what exactly the statistics are, but as the younger generations are having less money and less opportunity, that means more problems because it is so expensive to fix these things. You set something up wrong. You TOD a property to... There are so many ways that you can just accidentally end up landing your house in like the control of like two adults and five kids. Okay. You do a TOD wrong or one of these other documents wrong.
Say you set something up when you're 40 years old.
Yep.
And then your kids grow up and you thought you were going to have one kid, but you didn't touch it. And now you've got four kids and one of them's a stepkid.
Yep.
And then you said you left it to all of them and they don't get along 20 years down the road.
Some of these things we can fix. Some of them we just simply can't. But some of these, like, there are ways that you can actually just ruin everything. But there are ways that we can sometimes rescue a bad estate plan. But they're generally expensive. They take a lot of work. And if you don't have a lot of money, you really can't afford to, well, or rather your kids really can't afford for you to have screwed it up. You know, maybe... But again, I mean, if you've got plenty of money, you still don't want to waste it just undoing something that
you don't want to keep messing with something continuously.
Exactly.
All right.
So the next one is there seems to be this kind of maelstrom of misinformation about estate planning. And I understand why. A lot of it is because we do have so many options now. I'll have people come in. Usually, what people expect that they need is not exactly what they need. So I'll have people who come in and they say, you know, I need a will. And it turns out they've got a special situation where we can do like a transfer on death deed. It's going to be cheaper than a will and it's going to save their kids from having to go to probate. And so instead of saying, hey, sweet, I fell into a special crack, they get on social media and they say, will's a scam. You do a will, it's the lawyers trying to cheat you. You need a TOD deed. Well, then the next person who has six kids comes in and you only a maniac would TOD
you're just legally dropping your kids into a cage match.
Exactly. That's what you're doing. Yeah. Just boom. The house belongs to all six of you. Good luck. Like, oh, someone's got judgments. Now the house does. But, you know, then they come in. Now they already are kind of not trusting the attorneys because somebody already told them, like, hey, it's all a scam.
You know, the attorney is who directed them.
Exactly. Yep. So that's one of the big ones. Is like
the challenge that some people would give you is that, hey, if you have me go with a will, now I have to go to the courthouse and have to pay money to get my money back out of this, right?
Yep.
That's the challenge that you hear from folks.
That's a frequent challenge, you know, or I'll have people who come in, like I guess I already gave the will example or the trust example. They come in thinking that they need a trust. And again, maybe they fall into some crack where they can do some of the transfer on death deeds. It's the point is there is way too many options.
Well, Bash, why wouldn't I just give it all to my kids now while I'm still living? That way I can look like I'm poor on paper, and when I go to the nursing home, I don't burn through all their money.
Oh, that's another one that happens sometimes. And, you know, if it works out for you, congratulations. That is wonderful. When you don't own your stuff, that's generally problematic. Like I've seen, you know, where someone will deed their house to, you know, whatever, to their son, in order to try to like dodge Medicaid. And then they don't go to a nursing home. And why did they do that anyway? Or they decide instead of a nursing home, I think it's time that I sell this house and move into an apartment. Son says, I don't think that's a great idea. And I own the house. So we're not going to sell it. It's not your house.
Now we're fighting.
Yeah. Or son calls him and says, hey, your daughter-in-law is divorcing me and she owns half your house and she wants you evicted.
Or the son says, hey, well, we could dream all kinds of shit up, Zach.
Oh, yeah.
Or the son says, you know what, Dad, you're done living in that house. I'm selling it. And you're going to a home.
Yeah, because the real estate market just went crazy.
Right.
And I'm moving to a condo in Boca Raton.
Uh-huh.
How much power do you want to give little Jackson, Zach? That's the question.
None. I have to hope I still had a camper to live in. That's where I'd end up. What did you sell the house for, buddy? I wanted to buy Roblox skins or something. Like, it would just be for credits in a game.
Yes.
I bought candy canes and skins.
So then the last of the five is now we have all these predatory websites. And that, I mean,
like realtor.com.
I mean, essentially,
Zillow.
Yeah, the lawyer version of it. You know, LegalZoom, there's a couple of them now, Rocket Law, et cetera. These are not AI.
Is that by the Rocket Mortgage people?
It could be.
Rocket Law, Rocket Mortgage.
It certainly might be.
Give them a minute. They'll try.
Yeah. And essentially what they try to present is this, like, oh, it's simple. You know, you already know that you were going to go in and tell your lawyer that you need a TOD deed anyway. You can download a TOD deed from us. It'll cost pretty similar to what the lawyer would charge.
I need an attorney's view. I know you're still working on this, but
no,
I've
had it.
Now I'm worried. I just opened up a weed. My eyes are not good enough. I'm 39 years old. It says blueberry. It says Wild Ohio, I think. Is that a cannabis plant on there, or is it just some sort of a blueberry plant?
It says it's really brewed with tea.
It's very difficult to know.
How long until we start seeing hybrids? Can you like crossbreed
kind of fancy smell.
Cannabis plants with like fruit and just end up with like cannabis infused fruit? That's the next thing. There's some guy living in his mom's basement who's brewing that genetic mistake up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've gotten ahead of ourselves by cracking that open. But,
oh, no, that's all right.
So predatory websites.
Yeah. So
once again, you're saying
stepping in to fill this void.
Rather than paying that $200 to the website that you're not sure about, you've got, if you're in the listening area, yes, Bash can work with you. If you're in Indiana, yes, Bash can work with you. But find somebody locally that you can speak with.
Yeah. Find someone who is either local to you or what's kind of funny is before the websites, I used to have, you know, the same kind of frustration where it was like, I charge half of what they're charging over in Indianapolis, you know? So, I mean, I guess if you are in a particularly wealthy area, you know, you might want to go find a pseudo local attorney, though even then you're depending where you are, they may have a better idea of, you know, what your particular needs are. But point being, see an actual attorney, not just that, see an attorney who does this kind of law. Like, don't hire me to do your custody case. I'm trained in that, but I don't do that. I don't do that repeatedly. I haven't seen, well, a long time ago I did, but not in years have I seen both ends of a custody case. Don't ask me to do that.
It's not your core function any longer.
Right. So go find a local attorney, find someone who knows about estate planning, who has handled a few estates, and and you'll be fine. The rest of it is, this doesn't have to be a hard or expensive process. Most people are shocked at how easy it is.
I did mine with Bash last somewhere between Cinco de Mayo and the end of last year. And after he was on the program with us, and Sarah and I went in, I think we met for maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, somewhere in there. Very simple, easy conversation, drew the paperwork up, and then we signed it maybe a week later. Good to go. Pretty painless.
Yeah.
So who needs to have something in place?
I would say anyone with kids. If you are older than 18, then it's a good idea to get your power of attorney and your healthcare appointment. But as far as like when there is an actual need, I would say anybody with kids. And the reason being, if you pass away while your children are young, what'll happen is all of your money goes into a guardianship and then it just dumps into your kids' laps when they turn 18. I don't know what kind of financial decisions you guys were making when you were 18, but if that's all you're ever going to get, that's just generally not the best time to receive it. And we can protect your kids from that. We can set up, well, first of all, you can make a guardian recommendation so that it's not just whoever steps up. It's actually, you know, the people who you trust, who you, you know, whatever, respect their parenting abilities, et cetera. And then you can create a trust that will pay out for your kids' health maintenance, welfare and support, education, things like that, you know, give them half of their inheritance, you know, when they're 25 or so. I mean, you can choose the ages, but
right.
You see what I'm saying?
So any income levels, net worths, anything like that people should be concerned about? Or is it's more than just about the money. It's about direction and what's supposed to happen.
It's really about the direction. Because the upside of all those tools, we were talking about the downside of having all those options. The upside is we can do whatever you need done. Like, we're to that point. Whatever you tell me, as long as it is legal, I can make you the documents that do that. So the only question is financially optimizing it. If you don't have a lot of money, there are cheaper options. If you do have, you know, a lot of money, which will probably also mean complexity, then there are ways that we can handle that complexity.
Just lots and lots of mattresses. That's pretty simple. just have to make sure that they, you know, yeah. that they don't fall into the wrong hands.
Exactly.
All right. So we know we have a lot of crypto billionaires that have been created.
Better believe it.
You have also become the Henry County crypto expert for us. Is Tulip Mania over? What's going on in the old world of crypto? Is it too late? Should we still be investing? Is it no different than buying a euro or a dollar or a peso? What should we know as of 2023?
So I would call it too late. I would call it dead, but I think there's a really important caveat there. Like, you can still, there's still people making money and losing money on Beanie Babies. You know, any kind of collectible, anything that people have sunk money into that still exists can still be traded, right? I think you had even said that you had a couple of Dogecoins that are more valuable like now.
500 Dogecoins that are worth, they're up maybe, probably triple from the original price.
Sure.
But yep. What's the point?
Well, right. And yeah, and that's kind of the thing is that they're going to devalue over time. Because Dogecoin is one of the meme coins, there is an infinite, well, there can be an infinite number. There will always be more Dogecoins. Essentially, the biggest problem for crypto now, well, the two biggest problems, one of them is the hype is over. As this bubble has kind of popped, and as we've had more of these, like the reasons to buy and the people who are into it turning out to be scams. Essentially,
a lot of speculation, right?
As
you get publicity, you get people that get interested just because they can create a profile for themselves off of it, create a platform,
yep,
dress fancy, be Instagram famous, be an influencer,
astroturfing,
maybe live in the Bahamas for a little while until you get your arrest.
Yep. So astroturfing is a I don't know if that's specific to crypto or if it has to do with other scams too, but essentially creating fake grassroots movements, going out and taking a bunch of.
It's there in politics.
Okay. Perfect.
Very much in politics.
All right. I don't usually sway creating, into that field.
Creating the appearance of something that's not really real.
Right. Exactly. we still have plenty of that. Actually, in preparation for this, I got on YouTube and I just, I forget what the search was, but I just did like a, you know, current crypto news. And I, first video that came up was a guy saying all the exact same stuff that they, that we were hearing, last Cinco de Mayo, just the same, oh, this third world country is getting ready to adopt this as their national currency. Oh, we've got, you know, some kind of big development. Somebody's, you know, Ethereum 2.0 is finally going to come out. We're only 2 or 3 years past the deadline for that. You know, more of the same kind of stuff. Now, again, though, dead doesn't mean that it's not still going to fluctuate.
It still has a market, right?
Yeah. It'll still
putter. But it's no different than... It's a currency, right? So if you're looking and you're saying, okay, it's the US dollar, the Mexican peso, the euro, the Japanese yen, they all change in value in relation to each other. So you're just simply judging a US dollar versus an American or versus a Dogecoin, right? Sure. And how many pennies is it worth at that one time?
Yeah. And they will probably, I mean, I guess several of them have dropped to nothing. So certainly they could all drop to nothing.
Right.
The odds are they won't. I mean, as long as anyone can convince anyone else to pick up that hot potato.
Right.
And a lot of us.
What happened in this Tulip Mania time, Zach, and you probably can comment on this too, is that we nobody wanted to pay for anything with a crypto coin. Everybody just wanted to hold them as a speculative investment and say, well, I bought that Bitcoin at $500. Now it's worth $70,000 and I had 40 of them. So here's all my money. So you're not using it as a currency. You're using it as a speculative item that's going to go up in value,
right,
but you're not churning it as currency, right, but you have no problem. You don't say, I'm going to hold on to this dollar because it's going to be worth X amount in 20 years. You're holding onto that dollar just so that you can convert it into something else.
Yes.
And we've never done that with cryptocurrency.
Functionally the exact opposite of a currency.
Right.
And there have been experiments with making stable coins. That's what the Lumen crash was. We had a coin that was pegged to the dollar using, you know, some kind of algorithm that was supposed to keep it at that value. And it crashed. More, you know, millions or billions, et cetera, were lost. You know, another thing that I think will actually hurt cryptocurrency is blockchain technology is finally finding some uses. Like, as it has stood, it's been a solution without a problem. And as a result, the only thing that it has solved is, so like Bitcoin's a good example. Bitcoin solves exactly one problem, and that is, how can Bitcoin exist? Bitcoin can't be used to fix anything. It can't be used to program, et cetera.
The Bitcoin is the first cryptocurrency, essentially, that was widely adopted, and it is independent of any government. Right. That's the selling point behind cryptocurrency, is that it's independent of any of these nations' currencies.
Yes.
So it's a third party currency, essentially. Not a third world, but a third party currency.
Right.
Potentially for the third world.
Well, we keep seeing that AstroTurf. There are constantly these photographs of like people on computers, and it's like, whatever, Ethiopia is adopting Bitcoin. Get ready. You better buy some coins before all of these Ethiopians in this photograph,
meanwhile, like the GDP of Ethiopia is like 2 Bitcoin.
Right.
Like at its peak, it was like, they literally, like, how much you got, how depressing it would be, like, how much you got in the bank? I got 1/10,000th of a Bitcoin. That's all I got.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, what was that number? We looked it up a minute ago. 65% of the earth has access to the internet. I mean,
Elon's working on that.
Oh, well, yeah, he'll solve it.
Bitcoin and Starlink for everybody.
Yeah. Speaking of cryptocurrency scams, all of Elon's pump and dump, you know, with Dogecoin, like.
Hey man, that paid for Starlink. I don't know what. Somebody had to be sacrificed so that we could have internet as we're roaming the world.
Yes.
Here's the fun thing is, I didn't know when he said Elon's pump and dump, I didn't know which company he was talking about, because that's Elon's shtick.
He's going to court right now for the Tesla pump
and dump. Yeah, I was gonna say he's very good at stock pump and dump, where he's like goes in, says a bunch of stuff, and then quietly unloads like a billion. And right? he doesn't I made a million bucks. It's like, dude, I made $1 billion.
Well, and unfortunately, I think that the lack of regulation in cryptocurrency is what has kind of resulted in this bubble popping. The bubble didn't pop because people got bored of cryptocurrency. It popped because
it becomes the Wild West and emerging technologies and yada, yada, yada.
Over and over, people keep getting scammed. And
we have, just as a culture, we generally have, cell phone companies are a perfect example. We have an emerging technology that nobody has access to. And then eventually we have 20 or 30 or 40 different solutions, which ultimately, and the airlines are the same thing. And then eventually you end up mergers, failures, acquisitions, where you get down to 2, 3, maybe 4 companies or technologies that are doing something. And then you get this oligarchy style system. And yes, you technically have choices, but they're these massive corporations or massive systems that have barriers to entry so that the institution grows and it is what it is.
Yep.
That's what we've seen for generations.
Yep. Well, and
we're not there yet with cryptocurrency.
We're not.
We don't know, you know. At some point, if we get down to 2 or 3, then, you know, it'll be Bitcoin and Ethereum or whatever. But we don't know what currencies are going to survive, if any.
Right.
And which ones government is going to support or choose to like.
This is true, too. Blockchain technology, distinct from cryptocurrency specifically, actually is starting to find some actual applications. There's various, like, ticket holder services, CRM, I think, is using a lot of blockchain stuff. Blockchains are catching on, but not necessarily as currencies.
Because ultimately, blockchain is an accounting system.
Yes.
It's a way to keep a ledger.
Yep.
All right. In a off-site, third-party, secure way.
Exactly.
All right. So that is our cryptocurrency update. Ta-da. Wasn't that hard. We learned something, Zach.
Yep.
Are you ready to buy anything?
No.
You don't have anything to sell either, do you?
No.
You're good to go. Me and my 500 Dogecoin are going to continue to ride it out because I don't want the tax consequences of selling what I have.
Well, there's two things. Two points I had was, one, I asked Bash last time he was on. I said, okay, am I explaining this right? That it's completely built on faith of the people being able to market whatever. There's no actual like value to it if you don't determine. So that's the hard part to wrap my hand around.
There's no value in a dollar
either. Yeah, kind of. More so. I mean,
Bitcoin might be kind of proving, or rather disproving, the idea only kept afloat by our imagination. Yeah.
And then the other part is that, like, at the peak of like Bitcoin stuff, you had all these guys who were billionaires, except they couldn't remember the 24 passwords to get into their wallets. And one dude, I would love to have seen, there might be a follow-up eventually. There was one guy who was one password attempt fail away, I think, from losing access to like a $300 million crypto wallet.
The good news is now it's only worth like $4 million.
Yeah, he's
not nearly as much of a loss.
But those two things, as somebody...
It's so much better now.
Yeah. Because like those two things, as somebody who can forget my password very easily.
Yeah. What the guy needed to do is throw it in a trust and then make it his attorney's problem. And then it's on somebody like Bash to figure it out.
There we go. That's not a bad idea. Not for me. Don't, whoever you are, don't call me.
Don't put that kind of trust.
And then make the attorney deal with it. And then just walk away.
Looks like the pilot from Airplane trying to land with the sweat just running off his face like a faucet.
Listen, if you are out there watching and you need a estate planning crypto attorney, Bash Kreider, Main Street, Newcastle, Indiana, 47362.
If you want to be a pain,
Esquire.
If you want to be a pain, have him convert your entire estate into crypto and then have your kids They're telling them they've given you all the clues, but they have to guess the passwords to get their inheritance.
Were you always looking for a way to be a burden upon your children?
turn your inheritance into the worst escape room ever.
Turn your inheritance into Betamax tapes
yes.
that they can convert 50 years later.
Yes.
All right. Now, we've been talking about things that aren't that important, but now it's getting ready to get real, guys. Henry County is going to get a brewery. Finally.
That's exciting.
It is called the Blue River Tap House. I have a very terrible right arm. I can barely throw a football, but I could reach the Blue River Tap House from the Boss Hog Studios. I could make it from here. We're all excited. And we get this news that one of the I don't know if you're familiar with the Wall Network, with the Weird Libertarians Network. We've been around for about 12 years. And Chris Spangle, myself, Brett Bittner, Chris Galt, all of the founding members of the Wall Network, we used to get together and we would hang out at Jesse Riddle, Blackacre Brewery on the east side of Indianapolis.
Really? You'd hang out there. Oh,
we would go to Blackacre Friday night, have a Liberty and Chill. That was a Wall function. We would go have a good time, conversation, talk about what this network was going to turn into. This week, Blackacre said, "We're throwing in the towel. It's over. We're done." And it got me thinking and looking, and it's not the only brewery. Blackacre, Flat 12, which was the Hinchtown Hammertown beer.
Yeah.
That brewery is gone. Ellison Brewery, which is on the south side of Indianapolis, so that's gone. Brewdog, 18th Street. These are all breweries that have come and gone. And there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of things going on. What would you say is the reason why some of these are fading out and disappearing, Bash?
Oh, that question is probably above my pay grade. But to offer some speculation...
See, that was the attorney answer. He won't come in as an authority here. Now he's going to tap out on me. But let's speculate.
Yes, but
you know this is talk radio, right? Yeah, this is what we do.
Yeah,
it's in the job description.
Should have invited my brother. If anybody can speak,
oh, yeah. I invited your brother, Rex Peckinpah would come through this door. Because Dakota had scheduled him and we didn't know.
I think he's a little quieter in the market now, but my brother for a while lived the epicenter of the brewery world in Indianapolis.
Absolutely. And Josh Batt is still in town, and Chip Marsh. So
I think that's three Chip Marsh references in the last 3 weeks. Chip, at some point you're going to have to do the show.
Ooh. We could do a beer tasting with Chip on here.
Not in January.
I'm going to confirm something because Chip did come up, and Bash is in a unique position to confirm. Chip Marsh is the same person now in terms of that he was in elementary school. Was he not remember him kicking kickballs on the roof of the school?
That's right.
He was the big kid that was like just physically dominant over everybody else in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and now he is
the same. Yeah, he grew into exactly what people thought he might grow into.
That is hilarious and true. So
anyway, back to breweries.
Sure. Well, there is a lot of competition and it's an increasing amount. It reminds me, I read a long time ago, back when Three Floyds and Stone and Sam Adams were still like, you know, the craft breweries instead of, I mean, we kind of think of them almost as like,
those are the old time, big time, old time legacy.
Yeah.
Small,
uh-huh.
Recipe, non Budweisers of the beer world. Right.
Right.
But they're standbys.
Yes. And I remember reading an article then that was saying, you know, craft beer is creating a crisis because only so much beer gets drunk. The market is not expanding. It's just changing. So Sam Adams is not inspiring more people to drink beer. They're just carving out that Budweiser group, you know, and Stone is carving out, you know, some et cetera. So as you get more of these breweries, it just, I mean, simply becomes more difficult. Now, I do think that the beer community has evolved in a lot of different ways. Chip and I, and sometimes Bat. Jared needs to I got to get back in touch with Jared.
Get a kid, man. Ruined him.
Man.
He used to be so much fun.
Whew. All right. Well, I guess that explains it.
I'm going to get a call tomorrow.
So we have a couple of our favorite breweries, and we will order usually about a case per month from each one because we our taste is towards really specific beers, and we know a lot of the breweries we like, and we seek them out in that way. You also have, you know, people who enjoy trying the different things and the atmosphere, like brew pub goers.
Right.
And I have to wonder to what degree that market in particular is getting oversaturated.
Yeah. So my thoughts as I was putting the show notes together, which, by the way, if you join Patreon at any level, you get access to a super special Facebook group where you get the show notes delivered to you. You join that Patreon group, you can see the show notes, find the links and the articles that form the foundation of the show, and follow along with us as we're discussing. I think your oversaturation point is very fair. And in Henry County and downtown Newcastle, we have zero tap houses. We have zero breweries. But if you go to Indianapolis, you've got one on nearly every street corner. If you're downtown Indy, you've got 5, 6, 7, 8 of them within walking distance of many locations. Or you did.
Right. You've got 3 in Muncie, maybe 4 in Muncie. There's one in Rushville.
Rushville has Fish Moon, which is a brewery. I think they're a brewery, at least a tap house, but I think they're actually a brewery.
They brew their beer.
Guardian is up in Muncie. You've got the Hurrah, which is an old school tap house.
Right.
And you've got, you've got a lot of places that carry craft beers or specialize in craft beers. And I don't think you necessarily have to be a brewery, but if you have access or you have that style, a nicer location that actually cares about what they're pouring, I think that's what this community's been missing.
Desperately. And,
and that's not throwing any shade at Primo or anything else that's in town.
Right.
But it's just it's a different niche than, yes. And they're all complementary to each other.
Right. Well, also, I mean, you need more than one or two places,
right.
Yeah. I do think that the tap room or the tap house also kind of impedes some of the small breweries. This is a generalization, but I feel like there are really two kinds of breweries. You have some of them like Guggenhaus in Indy. It's probably my favorite local brewery. They have a couple of dark beers that are incredible. And then most of what they do are extremely hoppy, extremely hazy IPAs and milkshake IPAs. They're incredible. A lot of people, if you're not into IPAs and you went, IPAs, you tasted.
IPAs are a niche thing that people either love them or they hate them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as a result, Guggenhaus has a tremendous following. There's probably lots of people who hate it too,
but it has a tremendous following. They've found their core customer base.
Yes. And those people you can't go anywhere else and get a Guggenhaus. Well, unless Guggenhaus is still selling that beer.
Right.
The other kind of local brewery that I see very often is the five styles thing. We got an Irish Red. It tastes just like Killian's. We got a brown ale. It tastes just like Newcastle.
So there's nothing that's special other than it being, unless your hook is this was sourced locally. We didn't bring it over from England.
Right.
This is from right here in Indiana.
Right.
There's no hook to it.
I'm not a fan of that, but there's a huge value in that. And actually just today I was talking to somebody who was like, that's my favorite thing. You know, I love it when I sit down and I like the whole flight. And I always, every time I like the whole flight, I know that, you know, some other craft beer person would hate this whole place.
Or right. Yeah, or they go into a place and they say, I like this. And they ramble off their favorite national brand beer. And like, right. Oh yeah, this is what we have that's similar to that.
Exactly. So I think there's huge value in that, even though, like I said, I'm more into the niche beers. Like I said, Chip and I, we know where we like our IPAs from and we order them. But if you are trying to explore, then that's a great thing. It's great that there are so many different kinds of beer, but that means that you are directly competing with every single tap house. And if you're competing with every tap house, you're competing with Three Floyds, Stone, Guggenhaus, Burial, you know, et cetera. And I think that's just hard to do.
And I think two other points that I've seen is that you have, especially in Indianapolis, commercial real estate has increased significantly since 2020, right? So you didn't have people showing up in person and gathering, and a lot of these businesses were shut down or nearly shut down completely to the point where it was no fun to go. And then the rent, say you had a facility, you made a paid $3,000 a month to have your facility. Well, now all of a sudden it costs $10,000 a month for that property. So it's harder to function, and you can only have so many butts and seats to drink beer in person.
Right.
And some of these companies have not created a distribution model of putting things in cans and bottles and kegs to get it off of their campus or to get it out somewhere.
Right.
So if you're not what I've been drinking tonight, these random things that you've never heard of before, but they're, you know, I've spilled beer on my cape, but Anderson Valley Brewing has a Barney Flats oatmeal stout that I'm sure I probably bought in Cincinnati at Jungle Jim's and drug back. And I'm going to try to be careful about this one because it's still got something in it. But the Wild Ohio Blueberry beer that I'm having, these weird random ass things that you get into, they're, if somebody like Flat 12 doesn't can it, doesn't bottle it, doesn't get it out into the market for people to discover it and to find it, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but even they were, though, and they still aren't around, because you go into Kroger around, you at least go to the Speedway Kroger during the month of May, and they had Hinchtown Hammer Down canned up. But yeah.
And maybe Flat 12 is not the best example.
Yeah,
You know, I can tell you that I have never seen anything from Blackacre outside of their facility. Maybe they'd be a guest tap somewhere, but I couldn't tell you what a can of something from Blackacre looked like.
And everybody, if you listen to the show enough, you know I don't drink, so I'm not the best person to comment on this. But from my perspective of being around, it's also almost every time one of those places opens, it's not an organic, we moved to town and we're going to open this up. It's brewer guy or whatever guy from this brewery is now starting his own brewery. And guess what? He's going to take a certain amount of his old brewery's business with him. And so each time one of those is created, they're not usually just organically out of nothing. They're partially cannibalizing a former employer. Like even the tap houses, you mentioned the Hurrah, and then in Muncie, one of their bartenders left and then started Savage's Ale House. And I know that my brother and all of his buddies all followed him from one to the other. And so in that regard, they literally are fracturing their customer base. And a lot of times it's this one guy or two guys that'll go off and they'll start their own thing. And they'll take some people with them from the old one. So the old one loses a little business. And then they have a little core group, but then they have to develop their own. But they literally are at times like cannibalizing themselves.
Gerrymandering this little group.
I remember like when the ale house opened, and it was like all my friends were Hurrah guys, and then they all went to Savage's Ale House because that guy was a bartender at the Hurrah and something was going on there. And almost never are those kinds of moves happy moves, like, yeah, man, it's so-and-so's kind of, and they move off and they're grumpy. And so they will kind of like, you know, drop a little nuke in the old place on the way out the door. Right. Kind of blow it up a little bit. So that happens too, I think.
Well, then you get these so-and-so whatever podcaster says we're going to do dry January and everybody follows them along.
Yeah. Also,
and even further cratering the,
I did not realize that this was like a thing.
Oh yeah.
Sean Rao and I used to just 1 month out of every year, we would just not drink. He was like, we used to do it in February cause it was the shortest month. And and then at one point he was like, let's do January. Well, there was an exception day for the Super Bowl and an exception day for Valentine's Day. It was a pathetic dry month, to be honest. But
had two holidays in the first 2 weeks.
But then
February was real dry, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of when you need it. Like, we're in that rough stretch where, hey, by the next holiday is like Easter.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fickle, trendy group, I think. Like, a lot of people are just going to whatever is the next new thing, the next new thing, the next new thing. And eventually, if you're like an OG brewery, you're now the 15th or now actually probably you're the 150th oldest brewery in Indianapolis, even though you're only been around for 15 or 20 years.
Okay. These are all storm clouds for the brewery industry, but it's in places that are overserved, that have a market that's saturated.
Yeah. Oh, I think this place is going to thrive.
If you look here, we have a community. Rushville had a brewery, right? Mm-hmm. At Newcastle is, I swear to God, the largest community in the state of Indiana that doesn't have a brewery.
Right.
And we're finally, this is going to be advertised as a tap house, but in the basement, they will have a brewery and they will be brewing beer here.
Yep.
What do you think this complements the community and other opportunities that dovetail this in to continue to improve Henry County?
I think it absolutely does. I mean, I think so when you're doing that, like that five styles thing, you know, where you're not trying to like reinvent one type of beer and just keep hammering that, you know, that particular niche. What you're doing is you are selling an experience. You're specifically not going to be making anyone's favorite beer because your beer is, you know, is simply indicative of a style. But the fact that people can come in and get any of those means that they probably will. Another nice thing about like tap houses, if you're making most of your money off of your alcohol, you have a good profit margin, which means that you can like hire, even if he doesn't like work there full time, you can have a chef design your menu. And that's something that I find to be a lot of fun about going to a lot of breweries and brew pubs that, you know, even if I'm not in love with the beer, is like gourmet burgers.
It's a cool place to go for some food as well.
Yeah.
And by law in Indiana, we have to have food available in some fashion anywhere they're serving beer.
There we go. If you have like a killer like pretzel or like cheese, like loaded fries, whatever, just people want to go in, have a beer, have some like killer bar food, like a step up bar food, mm-hmm. then even me, you'll get me in there buying a root beer. And then just, yeah, and go in there, chill, like have beer, be in and out pretty quick. You're not having a full meal. Maybe you go do that and then you go mosey down to Primo or.
Very often they'll have trivia. They'll have reasons to make the place fun.
Yeah.
Now in the show notes, there is a story from Growing Henry, the Henry County Economic Development Corporation, telling the story here a little bit about the brew house. And I'm searching for the story here where they discuss the food that they were going to be offering, because they are not going to be a full menu. They're going to have a limited menu, probably the state minimum menu, as they're getting off the ground. But they are intending to work with some other facilities around the community and support them. So carry out delivery options where food from Primo could be brought in, et cetera. Kai's Creations, some other local food establishments. And their food can find its way down to them.
Beer brings people together.
Which is what we've seen a lot down at the Wooden Bear in Greenfield, another landmark facility. I swear I've been there over the last 10 years a number of different times, and they've reinvented their food a number of times. Right now it's Greek's Pizza. Previously, they'd show up and you'd sit down at a table, and there'd be five or six different menus with options from things, and they would deliver food to you from any downtown business. Cool. So lots of different ways that these can happen. So what else do we need to do, Bash? We need to get this tap house open, and then people need to be able to move somewhere.
We need more apartments.
Apartments.
Yes.
Now there are townhouses. I saw today you can throw your lawnmower away. About $400,000 will buy you a 2,100 square foot, 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo in Knightstown.
Okay.
Brand newly built, $400,000.
$400,000?
$400,000. That'll buy you one side of the two. It's a townhouse. There's, I mean, 800 for the whole place. Wow. But you can throw your mower away, and you don't need to shovel.
I mean, that's
or worry about any exterior maintenance.
That is pleasant.
I just need to be like an elven warrior, and I'll get my money back eventually when I turn 600.
So we, in finding my apartment, that was a really frustrating experience.
You're still a millennial. You and I are among the world's oldest millennials.
Yep.
So you want that downtown lifestyle.
Yep. A while back, I sold my house. So Haley and I were looking for an apartment, and we have a number of nice apartment facilities and apartment offerings. They are all low income. And then beyond that, there's Jamestown, and that's it. There's also the one behind Marsh, which is a similar aesthetic to Jamestown. And I am not
showing your age.
Yeah.
Marsh.
Yeah, that's true. That hadn't been Martian.
Like 15 years.
Oh, tell me. Man.
Yeah.
Tell me, did you buy your Eagle down at Goodwin's?
So, which is, that's not a slight against Jamestown.
Or your Oldsmobile at Castle Chevrolet. What did you do?
Well, we had gotten out of a movie at the Castle Theater, and we were looking for an apartment.
Walked across the street on the payphone across the street.
Yes.
Called around.
Oh, cost a nickel to make that call, you know?
Oh, man, I remember that payphone.
Okay. All right. Back.
That's like a core memory, because any kid that grew up in Newcastle, that's how you had to walk across there to call your parents after a movie. But yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I think there's a struggle with apartment builders to build an apartment complex and then not almost immediately to get by have to turn into like accepting vouchers for like low income housing.
You get some grants. The mess that happened to our poor Jennings building, like that's
the building that's got potential to turn into a nice place.
Have you seen those apartments? They're gorgeous. I mean, they're like, I would pay $1,000 a month.
So paint the picture for us. So why is it a struggle? Why are the Jennings Buildings apartments not available? They're not available
because they're low income, which we do need a number of low income apartments. We don't need every single apartment.
Please continue bragging about how you're a wealthy lawyer.
We almost got into one, but we failed at the last minute.
Right. I'm just giving you hell. So what you're saying is that there are not market-based apartments available for rent downtown.
Right.
Or of any note.
Right. I mean, there might be one. We were so lucky to find one. Actually, it was a nightmare. Like, one of the worst weeks of our whole relationship. Like, we were both so stressed and frustrated, and we were getting ready to go spend, a mortgage payment per month to live between, a doctor and a drug dealer, because there's only one place for all of us to live.
Yep.
And
those drug dealers make too much money as well.
and then we actually, they were redoing the carpet in my apartment. So I stepped out of my office and I saw the carpenters in there, and I was like, wait a minute. and we barely got in, but that shouldn't be how it works. I mean, it shouldn't be some incredible stroke of luck that you find an apartment. Anyway, the point being, it's really hard to attract young people and new professionals to this town if they're simply given the ultimatum of like,
you have to buy a house. You have to live in Jamestown Village Apartments.
Yes.
Or you need to buy a house today.
Yep. Either, or
you need to commute from Muncie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely commit. Like, just buy in, or for about the same price as most mortgages in this town, you can stay in this. I don't know how old that place is.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. It was my first apartment.
Yep.
It's hard to find anybody that hasn't lived there.
I've lived there for a while too. Yep. We all have.
We've all had Colonial Drive addresses.
Uh-huh. And it's good that we have that option. Again, I'm not saying, tear down Jamestown, but I am saying that it would really be nice if we had some other options. So somebody build one. Like, I know you won't get the grants up front, but like, people will come pay that. And that'll also help the other businesses. Like, I think that it's a frustrating aspect for some of the downtown people that we have this huge, gorgeous apartment complex specifically filled with people who have on paper proven that they cannot go downstairs and give money to the businesses, which like
is not completing the cycle that it was envisioned for.
Exactly. Which is several problems. Like, we do need to be helping people to not be in situations where they have to have special housing, but we also,
But you ultimately, what happens is you incentivize people to not go make more money because then they'll have to move. Right.
Well, that is one of the things that happened is like Haley would have qualified at that time for the low income and I would not. And we were kind of forced into this, like, do we lie? I mean, we could just not like not give my name. And then because a lot of those low income apartments are nice. They're nicer than, no offense, Jamestown. Is Jamestown even locally owned?
Not anymore.
No, okay. All right. No, screw you, Jamestown. Yeah. Okay. Then, yeah.
So from somebody who's never rented, I'm like a weirdo. So when, well,
tell me more about once, your four vehicle lifestyle, Mr. Bertram.
Yeah. So I drove three of the four this week. So when a complex
obviously goes into,
goes into low income, like that's that are, is that the only people they can serve then? So they can't, like a normal, like you can't come in and say, I'll pay whatever rate for this apartment. Are they pigeonholed then into only renting to that?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once they go, it's just that complex is just kind of off the.
Right. Because they get some favors in order to do it. So it makes sense that they can't, you know, take the government grant. Okay. We're going to use this to help people. Oh, you've got cash, get in here. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, then with the bummer, I know somebody that lives in the Jennings building and they complain because the building, parts of the building aren't treated very well by the people that live there because it's not everybody.
Right.
But like, so she came out one day and she needs to use the elevator to get up and down and somebody just punched a hole through the button. And so it took them a little while to get fixed or whatever. So then like, I would think that if you can rent and get the market rate, then those people are going to be treating the place better potentially. Than an apartment full of people. There's always people that are entitled if they think they're paying for it or whatever. But I wonder too, just like you go downtown and I was triggered by a post on Facebook where somebody said, everybody talks about that their key thing for their downtown is for Midwest downtown is their historic downtown. And it showed a picture of the downtown street and it looked like every down, like they all look kind of the same. And I was like, this is triggering. And I posted a picture I had taken of like our downtown street. And I was like, all of the buildings, I wonder what's on the second floor, what's on the third floor. Some of them have third floors, a lot of them second floors.
And our downtown has, though, is it does not have a tremendous number of empty storefronts.
No. Yeah, we're
as of recently, we're doing a great job.
Yeah, and the Tap House is filling one of the few kind of holes. It was a nice building. It's being redone. There's another building that's being, the upstairs is being redone, the one that they're throwing the mural on the side. And when it cut, when they uncovered those windows, I was like, oh, that's a killer space too. That upstairs would be a killer space. I thought, man, if there's the only thing, I know that people, the historical committee downtown would eat me alive for saying this, but if there's a way they could throw little balconies on some of those upstairs buildings and stuff to kind of overlook downtown, those apartments would, if you could turn those into apartments, it would be killer.
There is a push right now, and I'm not sure which group it, I don't know if it's the Main Street Project, but I do know it could be the EDC. Regardless, I do know that there is a push to start renovating the second stories in a lot of those buildings and try to open up some good downtown apartments.
But you're saying, as somebody that has been in this market, that there is once again a need. Oh, just like we've seen the need for single family housing, there is a massive need for young adult housing that doesn't require you to have limited income, so to speak.
Exactly. And I'll say also, I was in a unique position because I grew up in Newcastle and Haley didn't. So she is not.
Did she keep finding, I'm going to piss Zach off. Did she keep finding houses that look cool that were on streets that had just letters for the names? And then you said, oh no.
Ouch. No, no, it had to do.
I like my little lettered street.
Amazing.
This is the shit you can do in this town is that you can just poke little tiny hair. For the longest time, we always joked that we just broadcast from somewhere north of Q.
Yeah. And he's looking down at me from his house on Caucasian Acres or Caucasian Estates, I call it. There's also a thing, even with
house, man, we got a new road.
With the, you got enough road to see from Main Street.
They paved.
Once you get out of the site,
they successfully paved enough for me to be able to drive on the old pavement.
Jeremiah's. They took his mailbox out.
That is what 6 years of podcasting will accomplish for you.
I'll tell you what, nothing. One of the little perks of small town life is seeing a weird thing like that happen. And in some cases, you know exactly why it happened and who it had. Like we've had Joe Wiley on the show. 1 year, they paved the county road that the Moreland 5K was on just to the point where the 5K turnaround was. And I was like, thanks, Joe. And, and it was a literal thanks, Joe. But yeah, even in the housing market, there was this. We had this donut situation, and this is going to be talking pre-COVID numbers because post-COVID numbers make my head hurt. But where it was really easy to find a house in Newcastle 4 years ago under $100,000, which I know in some people in the market would blow their mind. Not crappy houses, like nice little houses. It's like 50s. This is a very 50s town kind of. But then all of a sudden the housing market jumped from like 85,000 to 250,000, and there's literally nothing in between. Like now it's kind of the market's up to about 120, 130.
There jumps to 250, 300. There's a spectacular looking home that is two doors down from the studio. I looked today, $140,000. Beautiful floors, probably needs a kitchen update, but you could live with it. Five bedrooms, two baths, garage, downtown living, $140,000. It's
yeah,
nice.
And the market has shifted up a little bit, and so that's why I was kind of talking a couple years ago. Yeah, we had this kind of crazy housing situation in general, where and apartments would help that situation. Apartments can kind of fill in that middle ground too. Well,
buy or don't live here is an even rougher ask as the yeah. market improves. Well, and something that I was discovering as Haley and I were looking, because you know, for me, Newcastle's just in my blood. It was incredibly disheartening.
Have you tried to leave?
I have. I went all the way to New York for college, and I spent half of every barbecue year in Florida. And I came back.
And here you are.
Here I am.
Like a moth to a flame.
Like a moth to a flame.
All right. I interrupted.
No, that's all right. It was very disheartening for her, and it sent, I think, a very unfortunate message to her. That regardless of the quality of the one option, why is there only one option? Just nobody, you don't even need to tell me what it is. What sucks, but something must suck about this place. Like we don't need more than one apartment complex, and it only had like one opening at the time anyway. Right. So it's like there's only Jamestown. We can't even get into Jamestown.
You have a limited number of people that are willing to invest or put the risk in. And I, you know, thankful for Mike, Patty, and Scott for turning this building around and investing in downtown.
They're absolutely
in creating a spot for this podcast to exist in downtown Newcastle. But there aren't a lot of people. There's a handful, but there are not a lot of people that are willing to put the effort in that they do to invest in the community to create that. Right. And it comes with real financial risk. You know, you go out and you buy a building that might be okay, probably going to be okay. We hope it's okay. God, we're praying it's okay. Hope it doesn't need too much. To get it turned around so that you can rent it to a podcast that's going to sit there for 4 or 5 years and you know, and churn out one apartment upstairs. But it's now a productive building in the community. You know, it takes a special person that's willing to do that and that doesn't – you have to find somebody that's willing to invest in buildings like that versus saying, no, I'm going to go invest in my crypto and triple my money this quarter. I don't want to play the long game here. Hell with my local town.
Right.
I'm going to buy me some Tesla stock and we're going to go to the moon.
Yep.
That's what those are competing against.
That's true. Or just grab up the grants to make another low income area.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very true. Well, hey, if you're thinking about it, here is at least one testimony that we desperately need more apartments. If you are trying to decide, should I build an apartment complex? Do it. Just do it. Please do it.
High rise downtown apartment complex.
Yeah. Make it near the new brew pub.
Yeah. Downtown.
Downtown.
We don't want suburbia. You want walkable.
Yeah.
Pack them in tight.
Yeah.
Got a coffee shop down here now.
You know, one of the most magical things about those, the Jennings building apartments, is the view from the windows. Like it looks like.
Like a downtown area.
Yeah, like a sweet downtown area. It really felt.
You can see the Christmas tree.
Yeah, I felt my like sense of pride in Newcastle swell when I was in there looking out those windows. And it was like, you know.
And then they put the velvet ropes up and said, no, sir.
Yeah.
No, sir. Get back in your Range Rover. You can't well, stay yeah. here.
We saw you sit down. Your wall is too thick. That is a bummer. Like I don't, like I said, I never plan on going anywhere. And so I live in a house a quarter mile from where I grew up, but it's, I didn't realize that when those apartment complexes kind of switched to that, then all of a sudden they're just locked out. And we do have like apartment complexes have gone up, or at least there's one a couple blocks from my house that went up and it's nice. But I think that, and he kind of got attacked for, they wanted to do an expansion, but like they build it. And I think they try for a minute and then they just say, okay, never mind. And they just switch to whatever it's called. And then they're kind of gone to that.
They go to a subsidized model and then it's done. Hey, you guys want some happy news?
Yeah.
So Gayla Taylor is a Boss Hog alum. She's been a patron for the show. And I've watched this story go from my local news feed to national news in the last 3 days. Are you guys familiar with Gayla Taylor and her grandchild's dog?
I've not heard of this story. No.
Okay. So her son, the daughter and the son-in-law or whatever, two of her kids and then her grandchild moving cross country, hauling their U-Haul, autistic 8-year-old son in the back seat and their family dog, their therapy dog. They're going from California to Indiana. Dog goes missing, like gets out of the car. They went, it stopped, check under the hood. Dog disappears in New Mexico.
Oh no.
Can't find the dog anywhere. They have to press on, so they left the dog behind. So kids crying, sad, horrible situation. Gayla takes it upon herself, makes all kinds of Facebook posts, figures out where they were, starts posting in community of New Mexico. Dog shows up yesterday or the day before, 100 miles from where they were, ends up in a shelter. And she had called. Then they're trying to figure out how to get the dog back because they've made it to Indiana at this point. Fox 59 finds out about the story, and now Fox National News has got it, and it's being picked up by Fox 59, which is like Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns about 75 TV stations across the country. So the story has been all over North America today. And they moved to Anderson, but it's Gayla's grandson, and he's getting his dog back.
That's incredible.
So it is coming back. There's a GoFundMe. They're paying for the transport. The dog went to a dog spa today and got its nails done and got all done up so that this transport driver could pick the dog up and come back home to Indiana.
Oh, that's lovely.
So a nice story, Zachary.
Yeah. Everybody likes a good reunion.
And it's in the Boss Hog family because Gayla's an alumni.
Especially a dog. Who doesn't want to see a happy dog?
That's it. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So, all right. Final thoughts, Zachary Burcham. You got anything for me?
No, I'll share an embarrassing story I was showing before the show. I went to Subway today, and I sat at the drive-thru like an idiot.
Don't they have an app for that?
Yes. I normally would order with the app. I'm very pro-app. I was presented with a gift card from my wife, who is the holder of all the Christmas gift cards, moments before, and told, here, you can go use this to get yourself some lunch. So otherwise I would have ordered.
She permitted you to have lunch outside the house.
I took her to her doctor's appointment today.
Ash, this is what marriage is, okay?
There we go.
You get permission to go to Subway.
She keeps the gift cards from Christmas, and it was a Christmas gift card. She's like, hey, here. So normally I would have done that. So I pull up to the drive-thru, and it turns out it is a touchscreen kiosk at the drive-thru. No walkie. And they covered up the part that says touch here to begin with a sign about something that I don't care about. So I sat there staring at it for like a couple of minutes.
Start yelling at it. Hello.
There's a button to press for assistance.
Are the cars behind you honking yet?
No, luckily no. Cause it was a little bit early. It was like 11:15, 11:20 or something like that. So by the time one car pulled up, I figured out what was going on. And then it took me 3 minutes to find the sandwich I wanted down there. And I still got the wrong one, but I felt like just like
Andrew Bowman would tell you this cause nobody wants to work.
The stereotypical
anymore.
Like people. Yeah. I want to remind him every time he says that, I'm like, nobody wants to work for you, Bowman. But I was like, man, I feel like such like the stereotypical boomer. I just sat here staring at this thing. I do wonder though, in a good like rainstorm, how well is that touchscreen work? Because yeah, I know my phone gets a dropping on it.
How long did you talk to it before you?
I didn't. I was talking to my wife. I was just waiting for him to say something. And then, like I said, but they stuck a sign over about some coupons not applying to something over the top of this where it says. Oh. I was like, and I find the kiosks like unsettling at times. Sometimes online, like McDonald's once in a while.
Do you have to swipe your card at the kiosk?
No, you go up there and pay like normal. But like, I know we have a Steak and Shake and they've gone to the kiosk model and it's creepy. I find our Steak and Shake creepy because you walk in, there's no hustle and bustle. It's just walk up to the screen, silently order. And it used to be kind of like a cool, you think of like a 50s diner place, but yeah, I felt like an old person. I feel old because of that. My neck hurt for like, I had like a Charlie horse in my neck from yawning last week. And what was the other thing I said that made me feel old? I can't remember. I posted something on Facebook about these things made me feel old today. So other than that, no, it's cold. My kids are going to be hanging around until 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow because it's a 2-hour delay.
Again. Another 2-hour delay?
Another 2-hour delay.
These kids are soft.
I mean, I would argue, but I get up and run in the morning in the conditions in which they can't walk and drive to school. I don't know if it's who knows what it's for, but
you haven't missed a day yet this year, have you?
No, I just looked. I think about 391 days or something in a row. No, so I haven't missed a day this year.
All right. Final thoughts, Mr. Bash Kreider. If nothing else, you need to promote yourself. If somebody wants to come get in contact with you.
Sure.
And they would like some legal assistance.
Sebastian Kreider. My firm is Hayes Copenhaver Kreider Harvey. We are catty corner from the Castle Theater, white building with blue awnings and a brick front.
Many, many old law books.
Yeah,
doesn't answer, just start yelling and throwing pebbles at a nearby window and you'll eventually get to him.
I live next door. So yeah, you just make a bunch of noise and I'll come out one way or another. And we do estates and adjacent things like adoptions, deeds, etc.
Very good. In sports news, this is the little part of the show where I get to talk about sports. Even though Dakota had nothing to do with programming today, I'm throwing it in the final thoughts. The game of musical chairs is happening in the NFL for head coaches. Frank Reich got a job today with the Carolina Panthers.
I hope he does well.
He's moving to Carolina.
Like, watch him do well when he actually has a GM that can build a team.
Dan Quinn has removed himself from consideration. He was one of the Colts finalists, and he says, nope, you know what? The hell with this. I'm staying with Dallas. So he's out of the game. The musical chairs are ending, and all of these coaches are saying they're staying with their team, which is going to lead to what, Zach?
Jeff Saturday
keeping the job. They've interviewed 13 people. Two of them have already said, no, thanks. I don't want the job. They're down to 11. They had announced a list of finalists, and Jeff Saturday's on that list.
There's a petition of people that don't want it to be Jeff Saturday.
There's about 1,500 people as of yesterday that had signed the petition that said, absolutely, hell no, please not Jeff Saturday. Don't let him be our head coach.
Poor guy, just nice guy.
1-7.
But it was, get rid of the GM. I haven't watched any NFL all year. Get rid of the GM. He's too arrogant. He's really arrogant for a guy who's built a really crappy team.
Zach, what do you think about you got predictions for this weekend? The world of motor racing, top end, high level North American auto racing Rolex is 24. Back in the Rolex 24.
Yeah,
at Daytona, the first of the speed weeks.
No, and I didn't pay that much attention to the roar. I did see that Shanks on the pole. I was kind of surprised it wasn't Elio behind the wheel because I know but he's not their full time guy anymore. So he's normally kind of their qualifications guy. I'm going to listen to what I've heard. I think the Hinch and Rossi guys talk about where it might be like a GP2 or a GT car because of the fact that the I'll call them LMP1. That's the wrong name.
The top end prototype.
Top end prototypes. Yeah.
The custom world
all brand new drivetrains, brand new cars, and they're going to not break, but they're going to.
These cars
have
run on batteries and combustion fuels. It's the first time they've ever had hybrids running.
They sound awesome, but if somebody wants to see something cool, and this is not new to racing, the LMP cars in Le Mans were doing this a couple years ago, specifically I know Toyotas were. If you want to hear something that's kind of cool, listen to a race car fire up on hybrid power, on full electric. And then it does that weird, sounds like a sewing machine on steroids. And then about 100 yards down the road, the engine fires. And it fires at like full throttle. And it sounds awesome. Because it sounds like you're a creaky door to hell opening up. And then it just fires. It's awesome.
Kevin Lee, formerly of WMDH, sports director at WMDH, now NBC Sports, said on his radio show that he's a pit reporter for this race. And because there are 80 cars in the race, he cannot stand behind pit wall because it is wall to wall of pit stands. So the only way he can do his job and know what the hell is going on, he has to be across pit road, which is unnerving enough. But he said for that first 10 seconds when the cars are on coming in. You cannot hear them. So he said with his headphones on, he can't hear a car coming.
Yeah.
So he's very concerned he's going to get run over by a race car because it doesn't have that normal throaty growl that they're supposed to have.
They need to give him like the Jetsons. I mean, he still wouldn't hear that over headphones. But yeah, like street cars, they make them make a sound. They have to play sound. So some of them sound like Jetsons cars and stuff just so to hear people so pedestrians can hear them. But yeah, I'm going to find a way to sit on the couch for as much as I can for the weekend just to watch that. That's especially the night stuff. So I'll hope an IndyCar driver wins something. So I'll hope the bus bros pull down a win.
They are in the second class, but the class ahead of them is fraught with issues.
Yeah, so those are all brand new cars in the top class, and so it's a good chance that while some of them might finish. They might spend a lot of time in the shop because everybody knows you never buy the first new year of a model change. There's a lot of recalls, and so yeah, they might have some problems. So one of those teams might be able to win it. So
gonna be fun.
Hoping for an entertaining race,
truly appointment viewing. I think the race starts and stops on big NBC. There's a little bit on USA,
but it's all on Peacock.
If you have a Peacock subscription,
roll it on Peacock all weekend.
Just turn on Peacock and enjoy it. So with that, we say thank you guys very much. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully Dakota Davis successfully delivered a baby tonight. We will see you guys next Thursday.